Hey, this is Keith. Or some actor playing Keith, I'm not really sure anymore. But we're coming to the end of my Los Angeles con spree. But before I leave, I have some scores to set and discover a couple truths to be revealed. It's all going to come down to the season finale of Rideshare Episode X. It's going to drop on December 3rd. Now, until then, I want you to catch up by binge listening the first season. And I suggest that you do exactly as I say. Or you're going to miss all the fun.
Hey, it's Brent Pope, the host of Breakfast with Brent Pope. You've seen me on some of your favorite TV shows saying things like, "Give it up, Jimmy. You got to sink this putt to win." On Breakfast with Brent Pope, I sit down with guests from the entertainment world and we do it all over breakfast. Or should I say Breakfast? Every week on Breakfast, you get inside Hollywood info and tips, great breakfast recs and booty debates. Most of all, you get the most delightful 30 minutes of your week. So dig in. It's Breakfast time. Listen at Breakfast.com, Apple Podcasts, or wherever fine podcasts are found.
Hi, I'm Buzz Dixon. I am the writer and story editor of G.I. Joe, and I'm here at Knowing is Half the Podcast, and I'm with Ray, Robert, and Gina, and have a good time.
He never gives up, he'll stay till the fight won. G.I. Joe will dare. G.I. Joe.
Everybody, and welcome back to a special bonus episode of Knowing is Half the Podcast. Now, what makes this very exciting is if we decide we do want to do Series 2 after all, we won't have to go back and do this episode. We can just, like, plug it in, and that's one less thing we have to worry about. So that's a plus.
Do we have, like, are we going to have, like, opening statements for this particular episode, or are we just going to, like,
guys,
get to it when they get to it?
Here's the deal.
I would like to do an opening
statement. Yeah, I think we should. I hadn't thought about it. I'll prepare one while you guys are doing it. Yes, we should have opening statements.
We are doing episode 11 of season, I guess it's
Series 2, season 1.
Series 2, season 1.
Man.
It's the Deke episodes.
Yes.
After Sunbow gave it up, or
I love
Marvel
I love me
cheap.
Some Deke.
Hasbro went cheap for this. They offered to do it for, and Bill Ratner told us about this, they offered to do it for like one-tenth the cost.
Yeah.
And they said, well, there'll be, and this is actually a few years later, too, because this was 1990.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So this is 4 years, 3 years after the movie, 4 years after the season two of G.I. Joe, and they offered to do it way, 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 way cheap and
uh-huh.
still promote the toys, and it shows.
Well, here's the thing. I don't, the aesthetic is very different.
It's very different.
I don't.
The quality is not worse, though.
The quality is what it is.
The quality is worse.
No, I think it's. I think this is what I think is going on. I think you're an 80s kid and you're used to like 80s cartoons and you don't like the 90s cartoons.
I love the 90s cartoons.
I just think it, to me, it was quintessential 90s.
It was very
90s.
The 100%. Tone of the voices, the animation itself, but there were actually fewer animation errors.
Correct.
Than normal.
Are you just talking about the animation, or are you just talking about the overall package?
Part of the problem was the link that we watched it from. It was a very poor quality transfer.
Yeah, the Tubi. I watched it on Tubi.
The audio was not good,
and it was better.
Okay.
The Tubi link I sent you guys this morning.
Yeah, I
was,
used that
was better.
One.
I thought that was the one that I watched.
The first one I sent was a different link from like freeanime.com or whatever it was.
Huh.
And that link, yeah, I'm sorry. And this is for Dave the Usher, the Patreon.
And subscriber. Anybody else who comes after.
Well, yes, correct. You can still listen to this, but Dave the Usher is the one who suggested this episode, sent us the link for it, and the link was not as good. The original one I sent you, it was a little bit of a worse quality. Tubi has it, and so we use the Tubi link, which is generally pretty good.
I would like to know, Dave, if you wanted us to watch this because you loved it and wanted us to enjoy it, or because you hated it and wanted us to hate it. I will say, I think I'm in the minority here for sheer ridiculousness.
Okay.
And for me and what I'm about.
I'm a little surprised by
this. I didn't hate it.
Okay.
There were so many references and visuals of jizzing in this episode.
Yes, there
how
were.
Could I not be on board?
Yes.
There were sounds of jizzing. There
Fair
were
enough.
Visuals of jizzing.
Yep.
There was cream exploding everywhere in every other scene of this show.
So, Gina, did you want to read your opening statement?
That was my opening statement.
That was your opening statement. Okay,
vote
I just want to make
for
sure.
Me, a vote for me is a vote for creamy jizz all over all the Joes.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, my general overall thing was just that this felt like an episode of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
For better or for worse. And so I feel like people who grew up on specifically this, because here's I came to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from the comic books.
Yes.
My first experience was reading the Eastman and Laird comic books. So when the cartoon came out, I was like, this is kind of cool because it's this thing that I like that now is a big popular thing, but also it's super dumbed down. It was made for children,
yep.
Whereas the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles wasn't. And so for the most part, I was not that big a fan of it, although I did watch a lot of it in the early seasons. Watching this felt like, yeah, if I were 10 years younger, this would have been like, boom, right in my sweet spot. I would have just eaten up the G.I. Joe thing and the goofiness and all of that.
Uh-huh.
But we are just coming off of episode 211 of the original G.I. Joe series, and it's got into a pretty good sweet spot where the animation is good, the writing is good, they know who the characters are, and the episodes are coming off really well, and this is just like,
it's just a lot of shouting.
I have a lot of exclamation points in my notes. Most of it has to do with jizz.
Well, sure.
See, so what they did here is, this is series two, and so they could only afford a couple of the actors to come back. Mm-hmm. So you have Chris Latta as Cobra Commander.
Okay, I knew he was the same.
This is Power Armor Cobra Commander. Sergeant Slaughter is in this episode as Sergeant Slaughter.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have all these other characters who I wrote down, these are like the new crop. We're not even using, you know, Shipwreck or Lifeline or any of these people.
Zarana's still there for some weird reason.
Zarana's still there.
It was weird to me that she was the lone holdover.
Baroness was there too, but as a background character.
Yeah.
I'm curious of the rest of the series if that holds, because I feel like Zarana is much more of a 90s character, whereas the Baroness was very much Eastern Bloc. She's all about like old school James Bond type villain.
But the characters we have to know for this episode. So the G.I. Joes, we have Sergeant Slaughter.
Zarana is the Rocksteady and Bebop of this episode.
Yes,
correct. Her and Metalhead and Naugahyde are absolutely the Rocksteady and Bebop.
Yeah.
As a crew, they're different in their own ways, but they all have weird accents. They all have weird voice choices.
Mm-hmm.
And they're
the biggest cartooniest.
They are cartoony.
Comic reliefy.
Watching this, it felt like the animation reminded me of the X-Men cartoon, which I was a huge fan of.
I have rewatched that about 5 times.
It's wonderful, though.
Again,
very smart.
Timing-wise, it was off for me. X-Men was my first comic book. Like that, so it was real near and dear to my heart. And so when I was like, who the fuck is this dude trying to pretend that he's Cajun? All of these characters are chunky and weird.
Yeah.
And I don't care for it.
See, I really like the X-Men cartoon a lot from the early 90s. And I didn't even think about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but you're right. Looks like X-Men, feels like Ninja Turtles.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You have Series 2 G.I. Joe.
Yep.
I gotta say, I was real bummed by Cobra Commander's outfit. We can see too much of his face. It takes away a lot of the mystery. Like, the fact that you can see the skin around his eyes means he's not horribly burned. He doesn't, you know...
Well, and he's wearing power armor, which power armor in itself is cool. Like, but the fact that the way he moves in the power armor doesn't feel like there's any gravitas to the armor whatsoever.
Again, it is a very Shredder-esque costume.
Very. I didn't even think about that.
You see the eyes.
Yeah, Shredder's covered in blades and does not cut a single thing.
Nobody. So here's the Joes we need to learn for this episode, okay? And I think that maybe this is episode 11 of series 2, so it's perhaps they've had some explanations. But we have Sub-Zero, who actually had that action figure. He's basically the ice guy.
He's a ninja.
I don't like that his name is Sub-Zero. I was going to say, I don't like it. It steps on Mortal Kombat territory.
Actually, hold
this
on.
This might have come out before Mortal Kombat was like a couple years later, I think.
I just don't want it. I'm familiar with the other Sub-Zero.
While you're looking it up, we have Bullhorn, who for whatever reason is wearing Native American face paint, but he's very clearly American
this
or Canadian.
Was very weird.
And he was like Oracle. He like worked the screens. He was the handler.
Uh-huh. Quick reference, G.I. Joe Deke episode started in 1989. Mortal Kombat was 1992. So
it was a couple years
ahead. Did have a few years ahead.
Okay. Yeah.
So, but then your other Joes, you have Gridiron, who was like the guy with the football mask.
Football? What
He was the main living... dude. I remember he was the main guy of this series. He was the
of
one Joe. He was like the Duke of this series.
Oh, God. A football helmet. On a soldier.
Yes.
I don't.
We also have Salvo, who had a weird helmet on, and then just he was pretty boring. He had a big he had a big missile weapon.
He had a big rack of missiles, which is, I mean, like weird. Roadblock took it to a pretty far out there place, holding a 50 caliber machine gun, for God's sakes. And then this dude just takes it in a
90s.
Yeah.
Everything had to be extreme.
Yeah.
You kept it based in reality. We're going to take it outside the reality. Yep. This is the 90s. And then finally, Ambush, who's like the hero of the episode, who I couldn't really tell the difference between him and Salvo half the time.
Ambush. Like, why not just call the dude Backstab? That seems
Backstab.
Like a thing. Like Nut Punch.
Nut Punch? That's, I would have loved that. I would have bought Nut Punch.
It's our heroes. Those are,
Nut Punch sounds like
guys.
A cereal.
Hey, guys.
Sounds like a 90s cereal.
Man, I'm not getting my appropriate amount of sugar and carbs in the morning. Have you tried Nut Punch? And then some, like, cartoon icon character with, like, a giant fist would show up.
Yeah.
That was 90s in a nutshell, guys. In a Nut Punch. So here we go. I just have written down here, just to start off, this is so fucking 90s.
Okay, can I just say this? If you, like me, have watched too many cooks about 5 or 6 times, if you're not familiar... I'm sure everyone is familiar, but if you're not familiar, it was a thing that Adult Swim had done. That's an 11-minute long video. Go watch it now. You'll never be the same.
It's really creepy. Right when you think you understand what was going on, they change it.
Trust me, watch past the first 4 minutes because I almost turned it off.
Me too. Me too.
But keep watching and then look up all the Reddit threads and then you'll be then you'll be like me. But in it, there is a G.I. Joe parody section, which I just always assumed was based on the one we've been watching. But now hearing this theme song, the Too Many Cooks is clearly based on this one.
Yep.
Like, if you go back and watch it, the theme song is modeled on this one's perfectly. God, so now I've got to go back and watch Too Many Cooks again.
Even the theme song, it's very 90s.
Yeah.
And it's very much like shouting, and there's like battle cries, and
to get tough.
Yeah, and then it's like, and this is our battle cry. It's Yo, Joe. So they're really like trying to work the brand. Also, I don't know if it's because of Tubi or what have you, the sound mix felt really weird. I don't know if it was just a choice, because half the time I had trouble hearing the dialogue because the lasers and the music were so loud. But in hindsight, that could have just been a choice of 1990.
I did not have that problem. That sounds like a your computer problem.
Ooh, I watched on my TV. That's not the American way. Too many cooks. Too many cooks will serve a helping of
them and resist the forces of evil. That is very clearly this theme song and not the 80s.
Do you have a little bit of the theme song just queued up, Chan, that we could just like drop in just to kind of compare right away for the people at home?
Yep.
And also, if you combine it with what's actually going on in Too Many Cooks, with people running through the desert, it's very much that. And now I'm glad that I figured that out.
No, you posted it. It just sort of had this click in my head after you mentioned it to us on Facebook.
Yeah, go home and watch that scene from Too Many Cooks again, and then immediately afterwards, watch the opening of this.
And for the record, I guess it doesn't even make sense because this is the secret Patreon account. But somewhere on our Twitter or something, we'll put the link to Too Many Cooks.
Yep.
So you guys can check that out. We haven't even gotten to the episode yet, and we're like 15 minutes deep. Yeah.
I do want to say that my very first note, in all caps, Gold Destro.
I
was already off board. Right there, I just stepped off.
But that was Iron Grenadier Destro.
What?
That was the one that brought Roddy Piper on board.
Oh.
Does that bring you back at all?
I don't know. Was there a Gold Destro?
Yes, I actually owned him. He had a half cape, and he had a totally black outfit that was different. It was similar, but different.
He was in this episode?
He's not in the episode. He's in the credits because he's a villain of this series. And he has Gold Head Destro. That's how you know he's different.
Got it.
And that was Iron Grenadier Destro, who had his own crew of Iron Grenadiers, who came about during this time period.
Got it.
All right.
Cobra has Operation Close Shave. And they're at the Everfresh shaving cream factory, stealing a giant vat. Is that how you store shaving cream?
They 40 million vats? Gallons of shaving cream.
I'm just saying we have our first, almost immediately, our first jizz moment.
Okay.
When, like, the shaving cream thing just explodes all over.
All over everybody.
And they're just all, and they're all creamed. And if you didn't know what you were watching, you just took that screen grab of it, it's just them covered in white goo.
It's ridiculous. And what kills me about it is Sergeant Slaughter and Sub-Zero begin the attack on it. And so they run away, and Naugahyde gets jizzed on twice.
Yeah.
In the opening scene of the show, they have the Slimer moment with the shaving cream. It once, apparently not enough, because we're in the 90s. Were extreme, so we had to do it twice, and I'm just like, at what point is it still funny?
It's one long jizz fest. So, and it must have been on purpose.
A sunboat, you know what, I honestly don't think it was jizz at all in their minds. It was whipped cream, because also this is we're living in a post what do you call that, Nickelodeon Temple Show.
Oh,
you can't do that on television.
No, not even that. After that was like
Secrets of the Hidden Temple.
Yeah,
but also House, Double,
can't do that on,
Double Dare was
Double Dare.
The
Double Dare
was the one,
that's the other one
that got people
cream. So, like, this is very much oriented towards kids. If this were a Sunbow episode, they would have assaulted a shaving cream factory and then taken away the specific chemicals, the CFCs.
Yeah.
But because it's the cartoony version, they have to take the shaving cream and, like, poosh, whoa.
I will say, though, in one scene here, there is a tube shaped like a dick.
Yes.
It's a metal tube.
Yep.
The top comes off. Stuff spurts out. There's a jizzing noise.
There is.
Was it like,
yeah.
Yep. That was more like.
It was cartoon
what
jizz
does
noise.
Your,
everything.
That's not what it sounds like for you guys?
You should see a doctor.
I shouldn't be drinking all this diet soda.
Get that checked out. That's what I've been telling you.
Apparently it's eaten holes through your urethra in multiple locations.
Guys, I feel real sick. Jen, what's the physics of shaving cream? What are CFCs? Is this a thing on any level?
Because
I thought it was the aerosol from the can, not the actual shaving cream itself.
Here's the thing. Shaving cream cans do have aerosol in it.
Right.
But it seems to me like they were figuring out a way to just sort of like in that one episode of South Park where Butters as his alter ego is like spraying hairspray just up in the air and he's like just keeps taking can after can of hairspray. I think they have found a way to just like quickly release all the CFCs.
But they're not in aerosol cans. That's my problem. It's a vat of the shaving cream.
Yeah, that is a problem because the chlorofluorocarbons, which are the things that they're taking out theoretically, are the things that pressurize a can of shaving cream.
Yeah.
So the shaving cream itself is just basically like soap.
Because shaving cream's inert, as far as I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for some reason, I thought they were also stealing cans, but I guess
no,
the giant tub
big
of it.
Tanks. Yeah, and they were siphoning out the tanks full of shaving cream.
Yeah.
So there wouldn't have been any CFCs in there to begin with.
Almost lost in this moment as Cobra is attacked and then drives off with the giant things of shaving cream. Cobra Commander's almost lost moment right before they cut to the next scene. Do you have the sound pull for me for this? Because it made me cringe and laugh at the same time. And your sound mix is off like mine was.
Just a little dabble, do ya?
He says, just a little dabble, do ya?
And a little dabble, do ya? You do all know the song, right?
Yes.
Because I feel like Brill Cream hasn't been a thing. The Brill Cream wasn't a thing when I was a child.
Yeah.
So obviously it was much further back than that.
But it's also become, from the commercial, it's become a saying now.
It's a
little
thing.
Dabble do ya.
People
I'm
know
sure.
the thing. And Yabba Dabba Doo, I'm sure, has something to do with that.
What?
Flintstones, Yabba Dabba Doo.
Nope.
No.
Little dabble do ya. You don't think there's a little, because they sound similar?
No.
Because I totally was thinking he said Yabba Dabba Doo when I first when I first heard the episode. I had to go back and rewind it.
Oh my gosh.
And I heard just a dabble do ya.
I guess the answer to my question. Thank you very much, Ray.
Brill Cream, a little dabble do ya. Brill Cream, you look so debonair. Brill Cream, the gals will all pursue ya. They'll have to get their fingers in your hair.
Ugh.
That look the ladies love.
What?
Disturbingly healthy.
Disturbingly healthy.
That her voice is disturbingly creepy. All I have to say is Cobra is this. I wrote Cobra's running out of ideas. Like, they've been at it for so long. But they're like, what should we do?
Can I just say that hearing that commercial makes me glad I don't have hair?
the first time ever. But you're right. This is a real bottom of the barrel Cobra plan.
Uh-huh.
I have a feeling this is par for the course in series two. Yeah.
I think
from
this
what
is why
remember.
This is why they filled it with 70% of the episode with jizzing.
Well, here's the thing. They are talking about CFCs.
Uh-huh.
They're talking about global warming.
Yep.
This is the 90s where they're trying to be socially conscious.
Correct.
Oh.
And they're trying to put it into a situation that a child would understand. They're making an effort and just doing a shit job of it.
Because of this, I understand why there are so many climate change skeptics out there. Like, it suddenly hit me like, if this is where I was coming from, and because the ozone layer was the ecological disaster thing that was happening before Al Gore came along and rebranded it as global warming and climate change. The ozone layer was like a decade before all that. It probably was still Al Gore at the time, if I looked back to check, because it was the ozone layer is going to go away because of all the aerosol and all the car exhausts and stuff, and we're going to melt the ice caps, and then it's going to be bad. Nowhere in there was it, we're all going to get sunburned. Like, that's not where the problem came in. Because they sit down and Cobra and G.I. Joe at the same time have dual meetings where they're learning about what the ozone layer is.
We get a couple penguin jokes in here.
Sunburned penguin jokes.
You think Cobra wants to shave the penguins is what the dumb guy says on the Joe's side. And then on the Cobra side, someone says, give those penguins a sunburn.
Yeah. And so, I mean, and so he comes up with, no, okay, we're going to damage the ozone layer in Antarctica specifically, which was the issue of the day.
Yeah.
But somehow that's going to result in the ozone layer everywhere going away, and people, the sun will be so burning you, you're going to need no zone salve that we make to
just
protect
sunscreen.
You from the sun. It is sunscreen.
I think maybe the Cobra scientist came up with a crazy, like, anti-cancer sunscreen.
Okay.
That's, like, way better than normal sunscreen. That, like, you could... It's like the stuff that in Blade, one of the vampires puts on a bunch of sunscreen and then talks to Blade outside for, like, 2 minutes until the sunscreen starts to melt and he's got to go back inside. I think this is like that Super Blade sunscreen.
I 100% believe this product works. Can I start there? I absolutely believe that they're creating a problem to totally solve it.
I feel like this is also a real thing that drug companies do.
Probably.
Who's the AIDS guy? The AIDS medication guy?
The AIDS medication.
Come on, Martin Shkreli?
Yeah. Martin Shkreli.
Oh, okay.
I feel like this is a thing that Martin Shkreli would do.
Yeah, it's just the plan, even... To a child, this plan wouldn't work. Like, you're taking a real thing that was in the moment.
I disagree, Ray.
But, yeah, I think what a child understands is, like, the ozone protects us from UV rays.
Correct.
If you get rid of the ozone, there will be a bunch of UV rays, but still basically the same.
But Cobra's only get rid of the UV rays in Antarctica where we don't live.
No, the idea is that's where the hole is, so you start there, and then it takes off the entire
ozone layer.
It's
like a balloon. If you pop a balloon...
That's how the ozone layer is. It's a giant balloon encompassing the Earth.
One hole is all you need. Also, welcome to our world now, Ray. Now you know what Chan and I have been going through for the whole first season of G.I. Joe.
Those episodes make sense to me.
No, they only make sense to you because you watched them when you were little.
They make sense to me now. I think they all hold up, and I don't know what you're talking about right now. Why does Cobra Commander flash the peace sign and grab Zarana and pull her tight at the end of the sales pitch?
Listen, Commander says in his speech, he says salesmen and saleswomen. I like that he's trying to be more inclusive.
It is nice.
His right-hand man is actually a woman. Woman now.
Zarana, yep.
I think she's more enlightened.
She's Vanna White.
She's very much Vanna White.
She's not a partner in any real sense. She is the sex appeal so that Pat Sajak stands there, you know, like says the words.
I will say she is sexier than the night. Like if you put her next to the 80s version, this one is sexier.
I think they're both hot, but I like the 80s one better.
No, Ray, you've been brainwashed.
Maybe. She is hot, though. I'm not going to say.
She's much hotter. She has softer features. She doesn't have such a masculine jaw.
That's what I like.
Yeah, I'm into this.
Come on,
harder features.
Sorry, Gina. So we cut, and this is where the episode just, it's just, it keeps going, getting weirder and weirder. Cobra has filmed a series of TV commercials for their product to let people know this is a thing, and inexplicably only cast Zarana, Naugahyde, and Metalhead to be in the commercials.
Okay, inexplicably. Okay, compare this to what's the band that the...
Cold Slither?
Yeah, compared to the Cold Slither episode, and it is almost exact. You're being way harsher on this one because you didn't watch it when you were little.
Probably. Also,
but if this had happened in the 80s cartoon, you would have loved it. You would have thought it was hilarious to see, like, the Dreadnoughts.
Which Cobras would you put in their place?
Well, these are the only three in this episode, so I mean, they have to be the
ones would you... Because we saw a bunch of them sitting down.
In the 80s one, it would be the Dreadnoughts, and these guys are the 90s version of the Dreadnoughts.
You're not wrong.
Zarana is there to be like the sex appeal, but in the commercial.
It's so weird. I mean, I don't hate to say it. It's so cartoony because Metalhead pulls out like a literal like cane, pulls down the backdrop,
yep.
And then Zarana like is literally thrown into a chair, mm-hmm. And she just starts up right away, and it's just so disjointed and weird.
Again, go back to the Cold Slither episode. Where like for some reason they in the episode know the G.I. Joe theme song, know their own theme song.
To me, that's plausible.
They can all inexplicably sing and play instruments, which has never been brought up before.
I'm on board with that. That to me makes way more sense. It's just the logistics of it. Like, it's just bizarre to me. And then, I don't know. That commercial was, I found it strange.
All I have to say is the guy with the rockets, Metalhead, must have some serious back problems.
Okay.
Because that is like, he has rockets on his back at all times. I feel like he must go to like physical therapy like 3 days a week.
I'm thinking this, he's on like OxyContin. He's on some severe pain medication, mm-hmm. Which also explains his personality.
He's like a professional athlete that's just like getting cortisone shots constantly.
What I'm curious about as regards the rest of the series is Cobra, are a lot of their schemes the sort of corporate shilling kind of thing where they're trying to sell people things?
I think they are a lot of the times, yeah.
Because I feel like that's also something that became prominent in the 90s. Once we started getting infomercials and stuff, it became sort of a standing joke. That you know, if you wanted to get ahead, you gotta, you know, make a wacky, you know, Ron Popeil type invention and then sell it on late night, so you know the bad guys come across as this sort of infomercial.
Very hacky, though.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah,
they obviously don't know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And these commercials clearly have not been edited in any way. Like, Cobra has one of the best design teams on the planet, and I guess it's just weird to me that this haphazardly thrown together, what have you, is the best thing they could do. And I know we're playing it up for wackiness and gags and laughs, but it just didn't seem right to me.
See, I actually took it the opposite way. I took it that it was written that way, that it was supposed to purposely be like a joke within a joke. And the writer was like, all right, we're going to start out normal. You're going to be on a beach. But then all of a sudden we realize that the beach is really just a backdrop, and the backdrop falls away.
And then Cobra Commander comes through the backdrop,
yeah,
to address the camera directly.
I think it was all on purpose.
It was just strange choices, I guess.
I think it was all on purpose.
Let's cut to an Antarctica base. And there's a snow serpent running around with a giant hoverboard dick.
I am telling you, this whole episode is just dicks and jizz.
If I don't mention the fact that he's got a double dong hoverboard that's like peach colored, that he's like riding around on, and with little sparks coming out the tip of the dick.
Nothing says 90s like snowboarding.
I mean, and it's like rocket snowboarding, mm-hmm. on a dick. I mean, the fact that it's a dick, like, really, it stuck out to me. It's like, is he riding a giant dick? Yes. Yes, he is.
I'm telling you,
1990.
I feel like the guys that made this were making an Ace and Gary cartoon for SNL.
It's very much so. It's their car. Oh, my goodness. So there was a big fight that happens between Sergeant Slaughter, Sub-Zero. There's a huge avalanche that goes down. And then Sub-Zero is saved by Gridiron. So there's a lot of like teamwork kind of happening in the fight scene. Because we're G.I. Joe and that's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Quite frankly, I found this fight seemed to be pretty boring. So,
is this the music montage part? Or no?
Here's the deal, probably. Well, G.I. Joe gets into the base and they find one of our favorite throwbacks.
Cobra Life magazine.
Yeah.
Ooh. right around here also was the point where I finally realized, like, oh, that this is where it solidified for me the 90s connection was the high voices, because I've been used to the G.I. Joe voices of, like, they're trying to be, like, dudes, bros,
real soldiers.
Yeah. And these guys are like high voice. I'm like, oh my God, what are we doing?
And that's the thing that Bill Ratner was talking to us about, if you remember Flint's Vacation, because he said, like, they only hired Canadian actors. Mm. So they're literally, besides the people they brought over, these are all just a bunch of, like, low-rent Canadian dudes.
Ray's who calling would work on the Canadians cheap. Pussies right now. He's like, you Canadians all have high-pitched pussy voices.
Mm. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Ray wants to fight all of Canada.
Very close to the Canadian border my entire life. It's a fact, people. You just have to get over it.
Canada's our second biggest audience base.
You're not wrong.
No, I'm not wrong. I've looked at the numbers.
Here's the deal. I'm married a Canadian, everybody, so I'm off the hook, right?
So you're allowed to say whatever you want about their pussy voices.
But seriously, Canada, come on. But no, they hired, and they were, obviously, they're doing affectation voices. They were not doing, like, real acting voices. But yes, they are.
I mean,
they're very cartoony voices.
That's what cartoons are at this time.
Yes. In the 90s, it was different. They weren't as rooted in gritty reality as the 1985-86 G.I. Joe series.
So gritty.
And why Cobra Commander and Zarana are selling tubes out the back of a truck with police protection in the middle of the city.
Ooh.
This is their plan? I mean, I know there's no internet yet. You can't just go to Amazon.cobra.com.
Yep.
And do the thing, but they literally just take a giant truck into the middle of the city.
I mean, they sell all those tubes. How much money do you think they made?
You saw how big the pile of money is. $500 a tube.
Yeah, $500 a tube. I mean, there's got to be, like, at least 30 tubes in a box.
Well, they were just selling the tubes individually, one per person.
Yeah, but I mean, the boxes that were packed in the back of the thing. And plus, he did at some point say, like, buy a single one. Buy them by the crate.
Buy them by the crate, yep.
I just think he made a lot of money.
It's just the plan has flaws. And they did make a reference to the fact this was like a tester mission. This is to see if it's a product people would actually buy.
It was an afternoon of market research that paid off handsomely.
Thank you very much. But they made like a pile of money so large that Ambush could hide in it and easily avoid detection.
Yeah.
Good job, Cobra.
G.I. Joe will return after these messages. Now, back to G.I. Joe.
In one day, I feel like they funded like a year of Cobra operations just by taking a truck out there. And I haven't worked in a food truck, but are there that many people out there just like clamoring with $100 bills in their hands?
Apparently.
And why is there no other company getting on this right now? It's like
they don't know the patented secret chemical formula.
You
can't just make drugs, Ray.
Because it's not regulated by the FDA, you could literally make sunscreen however you want.
Yeah, but people don't know how they do. I'm telling you, I think that there's some secret ingredient there that makes it a super sunscreen.
Love.
Jizz. Is that the next thing for hipsters? Artisan sunscreen?
Well, yeah.
I'm sure it already
exists. They've already got beer and soap and all these other
pasty
industries.
White sons of bitches.
Artisan sunscreen, guys. I'm just saying, get on it. Get on it right now. We then trip to the factory of No Zone, where Ambush has ridden in the truck to the Cobra jet.
Oh, yeah.
Which has taken him to the Cobra factory.
This is where we get the music montage. In the factory, we get the music montage.
Yeah, he fights a couple generic Cobra soldiers, and he fights Metalhead, and he becomes David Blaine at one point, as he goes into like a weird like a hangar thing on a box, and then appears a floor above that in a tube of some kind, in a metal canister.
Also, we have a lot of jizz sounds in this scene.
Okay, yes, I actually have right here, can we get some sound effects of some of this fight as Metalhead and the big fight happens, and there, you're right, I just need to hear it.
So much jizz.
Fight for dudes. In that case, Ambush, the last word is mine, and I say it's No Zone.
Our mix is just not good. It's there, but we can barely hear it.
I could sort of hear it. But there's also a burst pipe. This is the burst pipe scene where it just looks like a penis squirting jizz out.
And I asked the question right here. Are missiles the best choice for fighting in a factory?
I mean, obviously. I will say there were some similarities between this and the 80s cartoon, it leaves a Cobra base completely destroyed.
That's just a staple of the series, I think.
At the end. I was a little bit nervous when Cobra Commander says towards the end, like, all right, I'm going to stay calm. I'm not going to lose my temper. I was like, oh, what is this crap? And then, of course, he loses his temper.
No, do you not understand how a joke construction works?
What's a joke?
Comedy writer Gina Ippolito, ladies and gentlemen.
Also consistent through the series, Bechdel test fail.
Oh, yeah.
Only Zarana was in there.
Hey, who is the asshole who, the hero, the G.I. Joe, who wears the Rite of Might shirt?
Okay.
No. That sounds
I don't know what
some
that is.
White pride Aryan bullshit.
It's not just that he wears because I have this written down. The Rite of Might t-shirt is worn by Salvo after he saves him in the factory. But there's a moment that happens where it actually says, Teh Rite is Might. And the is a T-E-H.
Oh, no.
Dude, somebody hand wrote that.
Yes. And so it actually cuts when he first comes in because Sergeant Slaughter is threatening Cobra Commander, okay?
Uh-huh.
And Zarana just bucks out. She's just like, I have a dinner date or lunch date, and I have to escape through the elevator, mm-hmm. leaving Sergeant Slaughter there to menace Cobra Commander in his power armor. And Cobra Commander, and I love this moment, he goes to use the elevator, and Sergeant Slaughter just picks up a piece of computer, mm-hmm. a chunk of it, and throws it and hits the elevator button with it. And is just like, you're not going anywhere! Mm-hmm. And I just like the force of that is just magical. I mean, he could have just come over and pressed the button, but he throws just a piece of something. And Cobra Commander immediately goes into negotiations with Sergeant Slaughter. I'll give you 20% of the profits of my thing. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's going to work. Oh, it didn't work at all. Okay, 30% is what we're talking. We're obviously making a deal here. That's why you're here, Sergeant Slaughter, not to beat me up. mm-hmm. And yes, and Salvo blows his hole into the thing. And he first off, he's wearing Te Right is Might t-shirt. In a later shot, it has been fixed, and it says The Right of Might. But you can probably find that on any one of a number of white supremacy websites. You can buy that t-shirt.
Ugh.
Is that message?
Is there an advocacy group for wife beaters? like an MRA group that's just like, you know what, we all agree that it's correct to beat women, right? Let's just NAMBLA for domestic violence.
I believe that they're actually Temite is Right.
Temite is Right.
T-shirt. T-M-I-R. But this is also sort of where the Team America World Police like vibe comes from, because mm-hmm. The heroes of this like genre definitely are like, I can beat you up, therefore I must be correct.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of Sergeant Slaughter's whole deal.
Yeah.
I mean, if we're doing it. So they release the balloon, and Sub-Zero does the classic like cartoon thing, the classic hero thing. He chases after it, jumps onto it, grabs it, and then pulls himself to the top of the balloon, and then radios the base and says, I captured the balloon. And thank God Naugahyde is there in that moment to be like, no, you fucking didn't.
I am also on top of this balloon for reasons.
Well, he's there to blow up the balloon. He's there with his knife to cut the balloon when it gets close to the ozone layer so he can rupture it and make it happen. Never mind the science of if it gets high enough, it's going to rupture anyway.
Do they not have automated devices for that?
Unfortunately,
they wanted to do like a hipster throwback thing where they were like, you know what? We have a rocket that could just go right up there. But
well, no.
I really miss the charm of a good old balloon.
This is an artisanal balloon bursting.
I was going to say, we're in the 90s, Chan. Remote controls are so 80s. We don't use those anymore.
Fair enough. I cannot argue that logic even a little bit.
And Sub-Zero does this weird hero thing where he jumps backwards and yanks the tether of the balloon, which then wobbles it, so Naugahyde loses the knife. So therefore, there's no chance to explode the balloon anymore. We're just out of options, guys. We had a dude with a knife up there. He lost the knife. GG. Plan's over.
Yep. we made our truck money. Let's go home.
That's true.
We made our truck money.
They still got the truck money.
I mean, I assume in a moment when the base blows up, I'm assuming truck money goes
That's
with
true.
It.
Or it was like $50 less than what the base cost was what they made for the day.
Right?
Yeah.
I feel like, because we're almost done with the episode, like, I feel mm-hmm. like this is an episode that had a lot of padding in it. And just a lot of just
Again, unlike other G.I. Joe episodes.
Yes, because the G.I. Joe episode is action, action, action. Shit, we're almost done. 60 seconds to out. We're out. Like, that's G.I. That's every. And this one, I don't know. It just feels like, I don't know. Series 2, man. It's just not the same. So they said Cobra Commander has a backup plan, a plan B, if you will. He has Metalhead shoot his missile at the balloon, which should have been the plan from step one if a rational person was writing this episode. And then a really weird moment happens. So he's aiming it. He has to call out loud how far away he's guesstimating the target is for his targeting system to properly lock on. Mm-hmm. He guesses 2 miles away, which is a very long distance for him to just be like eyeballing.
Uh-huh.
And then Sergeant Slaughter throws a parachute over him, pulls the parachute, which spins him around. He doesn't understand what's happening anymore, and in the moment, shoots the missile at the base.
Here's the thing. I don't know if he was eyeballing. He clearly has some sort of glasses on.
Yeah.
One side of which covers one eye.
Right.
So I'm assuming there's some sort of, like, distance lock thing. Well,
there's a crosshair on it, too, I believe.
Like, yeah. Like, I think there's probably something that, like, lets him be more accurate than the average person.
It's just, it's such a 90s cartoon moment, though, because Slaughter, like, throws the tarp over him or the parachute or whatever, spins him. He does a, whoa, 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 whoa. Can't stop to get my bearings. I still have to shoot right now. And then it goes in a completely straight line through the entirety of the base, ending up in Cobra Commander's chamber through the hole that they've already created and into his control room.
Again, everything in this episode comes back to Dix. He could not stop himself once he was already about to release.
Okay.
He couldn't think about baseball.
He can't think of grandma sitting around on the toilet.
Yeah, he got spun around and was just like, I'm shooting.
Gridiron is there with his stupid football helmet.
Gridiron, what a dope.
So he just shot it off. He couldn't control it. He just shot it off.
And then when it started going into the thing, it had to impregnate the baby at the end of the fallopian tube of this base.
Exactly.
Am I feeling this metaphor right?
And the whole time it was going.
And so the entire base blows up, but somehow all the villains are still in the base, and it's just lightly destroyed.
Yeah.
And then as they're walking through the chamber, what appears on a random television in the base but one of their unaired commercials, and then we have to sit and watch a ridiculous another commercial of them singing with, like,
uh-huh.
It's like they had, like, the Mr. Peanut hat and cane, like, doing a number.
Don't forget that they're walking through jizz this entire time.
And they're walking through jizz the entire time. And so it's Cobra Commander being like, I failed! This commercial's stupid! Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And then the episode's just over!
I mean, the aftermath is just them mopping up jizz.
It's literally, they're the
jizz moppers.
So that's
where it has to end. No, no, no.
Yeah, he shoots the TV.
He pulls in Elvis.
And then the episode's over. Like, we're just done.
Yep.
Again, you seem surprised by this, but this is how every episode ever ends.
That's, well, I mean, also, the 90s comedy tag at the end there. Shredder!
Yeah.
Yeah, or Dr. Claw, I'll get you gadget.
That's 80s.
That is still 80s.
Ladies.
I think there was... Oh, yeah. I wonder if there was some crossover, though. No,
probably. Here's the deal. Probably. But anyways, guys. So, Dave the Usher, shame on you. That's the No Zone Conspiracy. We did it. We are having an internal debate right now that keeps going back and forth of whether we're going to do Series 2 once we finish the second season of G.I. Joe Series 1, Real American Hero. And based on Gina's reaction to this, maybe we're going to keep going because you seem into it.
I'm just saying it isn't. I think we've just become used to the 80s cartoon.
Okay.
But in terms of quality, it is no better or worse.
I could not disagree with you any more strongly. But here's the deal. It's still G.I. Joe, sort of. I would still totally be on board to do it. We still have to have many internal discussions about this. And there's Chan over there just dead inside.
Chan hates everything ever.
So it doesn't really matter what we do.
No, I love Transformers. I'm not gonna put off that my Transformers show for another year just to watch this garbage.
What of Gem? What of Gem?
I am way down to do an episode of Gem.
Show.
Yeah, I'm into it. I'm into all of the above. I mean, here's the deal. I'd do whatever.
Look, it's not like we're going to be doing anything else with our lives in a year,
this
guys.
This is fair. This is fair.
You are not wrong, and I am sad. So there's the bonus episode, the No Zone Conspiracy. For the sake of argument, you can hit us up on Facebook.com/KnowingIsHalfThePodcast, on Twitter at G.I. Joe Podcast. You can email the show, KnowingIsHalfThePodcast@gmail.com. We have a Patreon set up, so you can go on there. Just look it up on our Facebook page. That's the best place to find it. And give us some money, and you too could make your own episode. But if you're listening to this, I mean, either up your pledge for a month and do it, or start pledging now, or whatever you want to do. That's all I got. Guys, individually, you can hit me up. I am at Almighty Ray.
At 999 RPMs.
I'm at Gina Ippy.
And we hope you enjoyed this bonus episode, bonus content for the Patreon folks, and we're happy to do more. So, Dave the Usher, give us another one, man. We're happy to do it, and that's all we got for you. So.
Ooh.
Hello, dear listeners. Do you enjoy playing video games with your best friends? Then I have the pod for you. I'm Philip, host of the Gaming Together, a cooperative podcast. Each week, my co-host Nave and I break down a cooperative experience in gaming, and we are always looking for new co-op partners to join us. So come play with us on the Gaming Together podcast.
So I'm standing over this toilet taking a piss, and I'm playing my Pokemon, and I dropped it in the toilet. I remember the Game Boy just tumbling into water. And I remember screaming for my mom, trying to get this Game Boy.
Wait, how old are you?
And she yelled at me. She yelled at me.
Oh my god.
I was traumatized. I was like, no, my Pokemon.
That's Gaming Together, a cooperative podcast. Come on down, co-op partners.